Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and this podcast is ranked in the top 2.5% of the most popular podcasts globally, and that is all down to my incredible guests. I am honored and blessed to share time with people who are at the top of their game and who are absolutely willing to help you get to where you want to be in life and in business. These are not people who hold back. Their goal is to share with you the essence of peak performance. And my guest today is a full-time entrepreneur and mother who says, and I quote, "I firmly believe that you can have whatever it is that you desire. It takes mental fortitude to push through the rough days, a belief in yourself that you will reach and deserve greatness, and most importantly, consistency in working towards your goals every day," Jesse Park. Now, Jesse is the founder and president of Inspired Insurance Solutions, LLC, which consists of hundreds of agents nationwide. She has taught the good, better, best method to thousands of agents nationwide and help countless agents start successful careers. Now, selling insurance can be a lucrative career, but few people really make it. Jesse Park is one of the ones who did make it. And in just 4 years, she went from scraping by on unemployment to a top sales agent to then opening her own agency. But her journey to success wasn't an easy one. And Jesse joins us today to share how the right mindset coupled with unwavering grit can empower people to overcome obstacles and limiting beliefs and make their own way in the world. Jesse, good morning. It's good to have you here today.
Good morning, Denise. Thank you so much for having me.
I have been following you around, lurking on Facebook since we had our first conversation a few weeks ago. And you have got a lot going on, but let's start, if you don't mind, by you just sharing your story. And as I told you in our virtual green room, I'm probably going to ask some questions about focus. Focus mm-hmm. is a problem for a lot of these. You know, we're so distracted. There's so much going on in the world. We don't believe a lot of what's going on in the world. And we're wandering around going, gee whiz, what the heck is going on? Mm-hmm. So focus, I think, is important. And you managed and still managed to stay very, very focused. So I'm probably going to ask you for some tips. Just be warned, I'm going to be asking about that. So tell us a bit about you before we get going.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Jesse Park, as you already said. I feel like I'm just a regular person who had a regular life. You know, I feel like everyone in life has hardships and struggles and things like that. But I feel like it's how you push through them and what you do to get through them that really determine your path. Everyone's always just like very dumbfounded that I started insurance just a little over five years ago. And I ended up in insurance. Basically, it was not something I even wanted to do. I had had a full-time job, a corporate job, and I was in marketing. I worked for a company for a couple of years, and one day they just let me go. It was, and I feel like that's not a story that's unheard of. You know, a lot of people work for other people and then just let go out of the blue, and they don't really know what to do with themselves. So I filed for unemployment and food stamps. I have kids, and I was really planning on, you know, just finding another marketing job. I was devastated. I did like that job. I remember crying relentlessly on the drive home, just disappointed in myself and, you know, wondering what happened and what am I going to do next and worrying about, you know, how I'm going to come up with the money to pay bills, because essentially I think most Americans live paycheck to paycheck, you know, or maybe if they miss, you know, three paychecks or four paychecks, they're going to be in some serious trouble. You know, the majority of Americans don't even have $1,000 in their savings account. And I was one of those. And so unemployment in the state of Florida is only $250 a week. And that's not enough. That's not enough to live off of, not enough to raise kids off of, or anything like that. So I job interview after job interview I went on, I couldn't find anything that was close to what I was making before, and time was running out. You only get 6 months on benefits, you know, before you have to reapply. And so I really just, I took something reluctantly. I remember even thinking like, oh my gosh, this is below me. I have a college degree. I deserve a salary. I deserve a 401k. I deserve benefits, you know, but I really had to humble myself and realize that, no one owes me anything and no one's going to come and save me. So I buckled down. I started cold calling, and that's horrible, you know, and I never really meant for anything to take off. I never really meant to find success in insurance. It was really just supposed to be a bridge until I found that other, you know, corporate steady job. And within about 2 months in insurance, I was doing pretty good. I finally surpassed one of my old paychecks in a week. And I thought to myself, I was like, wow, I may have something here. You know, let me go ahead and keep at this. And so within 4 months, I was consistently making more than I used to make at my corporate job. And I got a call from one of my old resumes that I had out for a company wanting to offer me a position at $80,000 a year with full benefits. And if that offer had come 4 months sooner, I would have jumped on it. But there was something in me that told me to say no. That I may have stumbled across a career path that offers something more than I ever knew. And so the reason for that, insurance, it actually is one of the only industries that has residual income. And that was a new term to me. I'd never heard of that. I didn't know what it was. But it's essentially, if you sell a policy and the client stays on making their payments for 12 years, you get paid for 12 years, month after month after month when they're making their monthly payments. And I thought if I was doing that well in 4 months, imagine my life in 5 years, you know. So I stuck it out and I wrote $1 million in business in 8 months, which was considered the record set for the entire organization that I was with. And I hit 6 figures that year for the first time in my life. And it's just grown from there. From there, I built my book one client at a time. I started recruiting friends. I built my agency one agent at a time. And 5.5 years later, you know, my life has completely changed, completely changed. So that's essentially how I did it. I mean, I know we're going to talk about focus and getting into the woods and how I stayed on focus and on task and how I did it, because 92% of anyone who ever gets an insurance, they fail. So it is a really low success rate.
I have always heard that. And listen, I can't have a job. I have made sure that I am unemployable. You can't afford me, for starters. And another thing is, really, you can't, because I'm a web developer. I do social media marketing. I do much better, like you, with my own agency than I would ever working for anybody else. But when I was in between, well, let me kind of back up. I had to have a job while I was going to school at night to get my degree. And every time I put a resume out, you'd make a great insurance salesman. Oh my God, no. And I just flinched and cringed and said no every single time. Mm-hmm. And why? I don't know what. Well, I'll tell you, when you said cold calling, I flinched again. I was like, oh God, no. Mm-hmm. I'm not that person. I cannot just pop into somebody's office or pick up the mm-hmm. phone and say, hey, I got a great mm-hmm. deal. It's just not me. And I knew that. But it sounds like you have had a completely different experience. So what would the difference between somebody like me is like, oh my God, no. Yeah, I can't even bear the thought of it. Have mm-hmm. you come across people like that where you said, well, let me explain how it actually works? Because I knew nothing about insurance other mm-hmm. than I hated having to buy it, and mm-hmm. I hated being, you know, sold. I really mm-hmm. hated it. So, mm-hmm. you know, I would have been your client nightmare. I'm just telling you right now, no.
Yeah, well, I mean, so first off, that's a two-part question. So if I haven't – No, it's okay. So the first part is about, you know, cold calling and how did I face that fear? Because it was definitely a fear of mine. I did not want to do it, but desperate times call for desperate measures. And so I have anxiety. That's something that I kind of deal with anyways. But when I remember whenever I put off dialing as long as I could, you know, I pretended I was training, reading brochures, you know, but when it came time to dial or, you know, leave, I remember whenever I first started to dial that phone number and my finger was about to hit that call button, I started shaking. Like I just couldn't do it. Like, what if they hang up on me, or what if they yell at me, or what if I interrupt them, you know, and they're mad at me, you know? And so for the first 2 weeks, I couldn't call. I only texted people because I couldn't bring myself to actually call and possibly face rejection, you know? And as time went on, I realized, you know, I sat and I talked to myself and I did what I like to call fear setting. I talk about it in my book. What's the worst that could happen? You know, what's the absolute worst case scenario that could happen if I call somebody? The absolute worst case scenario is that they call me names, they curse me out, and they hurt my feelings, right? Would I rather face that, or would I rather have to tell my kids that we don't have enough money for rent and we have to move somewhere, you know, not have a home, you know? And so I figured, well, I'd rather get yelled at and I'd rather have someone call me a name. And so I pushed through that fear. And I feel like some people, they don't have to face that decision. And so they just opt for the easy way out, which is just not doing it. You know, they think of every other way they can. Before, you know, I'll go to networking events. I will post on social media. They'll do everything they can besides dial. And honestly, that's how I found my success. Because once I kicked it in gear, I dialed 400 to 600 leads a day for a year. And that is incredible by any means. Not many people do that. They think if they dial 100 people a month, they're doing something, you know? And so that's really what made me stand apart from everyone else and why I found, you know, quick success. It's not because I got lucky. It's because I worked hard. And then the second part of that question about, you know, you don't want to be sold or anything. I think that's also where I was able to make a difference. You know, that's, I talk about it in my book. I don't sell my clients. I let them choose. I'm a consultant. I pick out a couple plans for them. I tell them the one that I would get if I was getting insurance. But of course, it's their choice. And so I give them a couple different options, different carriers, different bundles. I also give them the permission to tell me that they don't like any of it. And if they don't like any of it, I start all over and I find them something that fits their needs and their budget to the best of my ability. You know, and I feel like people have a comfort level with me because I talk to them like a human. I'm not salesy. I'm not pushy. I'm not the type of, you know, sales. It's a male-dominated industry in insurance. And so all I've ever been taught is ABC, always be closing. You know, have these closing lines. Say it after this. Do this. Do this. And I couldn't. I couldn't bring myself to that. It's not, I don't feel comfortable being that pushy. And so I just talk to my clients. I build rapport. They become my friends. They refer people to me. They know they're not going to get sold. There's no pressure involved when they talk to me. I literally just help them find the best plan for them. And I go over all the options. I educate them while I'm on the phone with them. I'll do a screen share with them. To me, sales doesn't have to be salesy. You can make an amazing living being in sales without having to be dishonest or pushy or any of those adjectives that are used to describe salespeople.
And you know, the thing is, most of us know when we're being sold, and immediately we get kind of, oh, geez, really? And we're not listening mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know when I'm being sold, and but my inner brat kicks in a mm-hmm. hurry, and it becomes a, really? Oh, that's interesting. The whole time I'm saying no, no, mm-hmm. no, and then I eventually get to hell no, and we're done. Mm-hmm. But some, you know, it's difficult, and sales are difficult. But I agree with you. I operate the same way when I'm talking with a potential web client or a social media mm-hmm. client, whoever's, you know, coming to my agency for whatever they need. I'm not selling them anything. I'm consulting. Mm-hmm. I'm finding, I'm listening. What do they really, really, really need? And you know what I find, and I bet you do too. A lot of times people will come to me and probably you and say, oh, you know, I've got to have this. I need this. Turns out they don't need anything near what they thought they needed. They just need some choices.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you know, a lot of the times I feel like people need educated on insurance, and I'll take the time to do that. And I'll go over, you know, what they think they need is not actually what they need, but this is what they're really talking about, you know, and I feel like that's why I was able to achieve success, not only just because I worked hard and I put in, you know, 3-4 times more work than everybody else, you know, that starts out, but I also took time to learn the products and then educate my clients as I built my book of business. And because it was a new approach, I got a lot of referrals, and I didn't have to dial anymore. Like after about, I started dialing less around month 9 or 10. And then from there on out, I haven't dialed. I haven't picked up the phone and cold dialed in about four and a half years. Because now I just get referrals. I just got one while I look down at my phone while we're talking, and one of my old clients wants me to write insurance for her son. So it's all the time I get them, and I don't have to do that hard work, that grueling work anymore, but that's how I got my head start, is by digging in and maintaining that focus that it takes to really push through the rough days and the rejection that you get whenever you do phone sales.
Right. And it seems to me, and I'm just kind of spitballing here, but didn't you start out working from a library? Or am I thinking of something else?
No, I did. So I tried working from home, and I was not good at it. I didn't have that discipline yet. I would tell myself I was working. I'd give myself excuses as to why I could watch the news, or that I deserve to watch The Price is Right because it's my favorite game show. I'd get distracted with laundry, saying I needed to do laundry. And I feel like that's what a lot of agents do. They feel like they're working because they're getting ready to work, but they don't actually sit down and do the work. And so that was part of the discipline that I needed. I needed to get back to the routine that I had when I was in corporate, get up early, get dressed, get in my car, drive somewhere, sit down at a desk, and get to work. And so that was just something I did to train myself to be able to do that. I worked from the library for about 5 months, and then I was able to maintain that discipline that I taught myself by going to the library and able to work at home. And I had to be at my desk no later than 9 in the morning. I had to take my kids to school in the morning. So one got dropped off at 7, one got dropped off at 8:20. And then I'd be back at my desk with my breakfast and everything by 9 on the phone starting to dial. And that discipline is something I didn't have when I first started. So that's why I worked at the public library. I didn't have the money for an office, and the library offered student rooms that you could rent with your library card for free.
I was going to ask you about that because it's been a long time since I've been in a public library, and I just remember being shushed a lot. Like, what? What's this? All I did was whisper something to my brother or my sister, and we would get, you know, those finger to the lips. Like, oh, come on. I didn't realize that you could work from a library these days. That's great to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have private rooms that you can block out with your, at least the one I did. I went online, I had a library card, and I'd block out the room for the time I needed it. And there's like student rooms, study rooms, whatever. The library I went to, the downtown Orlando Public Library, had a lot. So I would just block one out, sit in there. It's soundproof, so you just sit in there, and I dialed all day.
And see, that makes sense. And I love what you say about, you know, creating that discipline. I had the same trouble because I opened my office in my home 20 years ago after I got my degree. And I would catch myself jump. I was like a jack in the box. Oh, I've got to do laundry. Oh, you know, I need to stretch myself. I'm going to go, you know, throw in a load of dishes. Oh, I'm going to dance in the kitchen with the cat. I wasn't getting much done. So I found I was working later and later at night. 11 o'clock at night, I'd be, I've got to get to bed. And then I realized what I was doing. I was just fiddle farting around, basically, to put it bluntly. Mm-hmm. And once I created that okay, this is a business. Treat it as a business. I'm like you. I'm in my office by 8 o'clock in the morning. I leave at 5, you know, and I've got some breaks in between because, you know, you have to figure out when you're really going to be active, what your bio range is, I guess. You know, I don't even know if that's the right term, but I know that around, you know, 1 o'clock I get tired. So I'll take a 1 to 2 hour break, and then I'm right back at it, and I'm very focused in. But I have to have that break, or I catch myself just staring at this monitor and looking at code that doesn't make any sense to me. I love code. It should make sense to me, but it doesn't when I'm tired.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I love the discipline part of it, and it's so important, particularly if you're going to work from home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So what else? How, I've got to ask you about systems, because when you're, look, I'm sitting here going, okay, she wrote this down. She made these calls. Did you have a spreadsheet? Did you have, how did you keep systems? I mean, how did you know who you spoke with, when you follow up? You had to have created something.
I did. So I had a CRM that I used, but I'm also old school. So I had I've developed this. It's in my workbook. It's the companion workbook for my book. It's called the 100 call sheet. And so essentially it's 100 little octagons on a piece of paper, and you laminate them. And so whenever you, and this is just, I'm a visual person. So anytime I would call, I'd get a voicemail, I'd write V. And then the whole sheet would look like V's. It looked like Q's for quotes. It looked like DNCs for do not call again. It looked like take off the list. Like I'd have like little marks. So V, A, Q, whatever. And I really focused on the Q's. So whenever I had a Q, I would take a notebook and I would write down their name, their phone number, their email address, what I quoted them. And then the next day when I'd get at my desk, I would go through my notebook and I'd call back all my Q's. And I'd be like, hey, Janice, this is Jesse. We talked yesterday. Wanted to see if you had any questions about the quote I put together for you. Were you thinking of when you wanted to start this policy? And they would let me know, no, you know, I need a couple more weeks, or I would need, you know, let's start it on Friday. Okay, perfect. So let's go ahead and put in the application for it. You know, I'm selling them, but I'm not being salesy. They could push it out if they wanted to. They could also tell me no. But that's one of the things I know a lot of agents are concerned about, is when they get off the phone with the person, that's why they push so hard, is that they feel like that person's never going to pick up the phone for them again. And so that's just not how, I never got ghosted. If I did, it was a rare occasion, like very rare occasion, because I made them feel so comfortable on the initial phone call that when I called them back, they were looking forward to hearing from me. They knew they weren't going to be sold, you know. I'm sure they all know I am a salesperson.
Sure.
No, I'm not working for free. but I was able to just build that connection right then and there. And that's what I teach in my book, and that's what I teach my agents, is how to have a normal conversation with your clients without being so salesy.
And see, I think that is so important, because honestly, I get really, my backbone just straightens up when I know I'm being sold and I don't want to be sold. I want more information. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to think about it. I want to maybe explore some other options. But if somebody keeps pressing me, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how good it is. I'm done. I get real pig-headed about it. And I suspect that that's what a lot of agents are going, oh, geez, you know, they're going to be pig-headed and never talk to me again. But you're proving that that's just not the case.
It doesn't have to be the case, you know. You can build rapport with someone to where, you know, I became friends with my clients. I got to know their kids' names, their pets' names. When I'd call them back, I'd ask about their dog, Fluffy, you know, and they'd text me pictures. Like, you can really build those connections over the phone without ever even knowing what someone looks like, you know. And I feel like there's an art in communicating, and a lot of people skip that part. And they just go straight to cramming the product down the client's throat. And, it doesn't have to be that way.
No. And, you know, just as a for instance, I had to spend 3 hours this week on the phone with AT&T. The first four people I spoke with were lovely. The fifth one, ugh, not so much. But, and you know, you're talking about Fluffy. I have a cat. He's a hashtag on Facebook. He's a 20-pound giant ginger, and he is hashtag Hamilton is an ass. You can find him all over Facebook. He gets Christmas cards. But my point for bringing him up is he was standing here on my desk chatting at me while I was talking with this lovely girl. And she said, oh, what's his name? She knew it was a male, I guess, because he's so stinking loud. So while she's waiting for answers to come back about my particular issue, we're talking about her cats, my cats. We wound up just having a good old time. You don't expect that from AT&T. Now, she wasn't trying to sell me anything, but she also wasn't trying to piss me off, which is what AT&T normally does. So I was actually really appreciating that phone call with her. Very unusual. So you don't have, you know, and she probably was, she actually was in a sales position because she was trying to get me to stick with her company. So, you know, there you have it. Just be personable.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's talk. I mean, you have created the, or you teach the good, better, best method, and you're teaching out of thousands of agents nationwide. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So that is essentially a method that I came up with that talks about how to build the rapport, how to get the clients to talk to you. It comes with a script on, and a script is by no means anything that you have to say word for word. You definitely want to sound like yourself. You don't want to be robotic, but it is a structure of how to talk to a client and what to ask and, you know, what bullet points that you need to stick to and then have conversations around those. It also is a way that builds policies and the way that it makes sense to clients. So a lot of people don't know, even know what's out there. So I present to my clients the very best thing first. Like, imagine going shopping for a car and you tell the car salesman that you can afford $400 a month for a car. And he takes you to the nicest car you've ever seen, right? It's fully loaded. It has all kinds of things that you didn't even know cars come with. Touchscreen radio, massaging seats, moonroof, sunroof, turbo engine. But it's a little bit above your price range, right? So then you say, no, I want one near my price range. And you say, okay. And if he takes you to one that doesn't have all those features, you know, it's a little more plain and everything. So the good, better, best method is essentially showing clients what's out there, even if it's above their budget, because some people don't even know what options are out there for insurance, right? There's all kinds of really cool things out there that pay for things that people don't even realize that it pays for, right? And essentially, you can build a plan that covers someone, like say for life insurance, right? They don't have to die to get the benefits. A lot of people don't know that. For health insurance, you know, you can have build it in a way to where they essentially have a $0 deductible, depending on how you bundle it, right? And but people don't know that. So the good, better, best method is essentially just where I present the best method first, so the best plan, the best car on the lot, you know, with all the bells and whistles, and then we start stripping it down if they don't want those things, but I'm very transparent with what's in the plan, and then if it costs a little bit more, I tell them, you know, this is slightly above the budget you gave me, but the reason why I like this plan is because it has all of these things, and then I go over each of them, and most of the time, people want them. It's very rare that they say, oh, you know what, no, it's like the car thing. If you could get the turbo car with all everything you ever wanted for $60 more a month, and the $60 was that car versus a very, you know, trimmed down car with manual windows and a cassette player, which one would you choose? You know, so that's the method. It presents the very best one first and then starts taking things away if they can't afford them. You know, and, you know, okay, well, did you not want the dental vision or did you not want the living benefit? Did you not want the child rider? You know, people don't even, they're not even aware that their life insurance policy can also cover their children, you know? So those are the things that I go over with my clients, but I do fully load it up the very first time so they can see what all is available to them. And that's essentially the method. And that's what I've been teaching for years. And it's proven very, very successful.
Okay, Jesse, was this taught to you or is this something that you discovered while you were building your own business?
It's something I discovered. So what we're taught as agents is to build a plan that's good for their budget. And sometimes their budgets are really low. And I kind of just started putting together these three scenarios, one fully loaded, one not, you know, a little bit less, and one very bare bones. And it seemed to start working because people understood all the options available to them, and they could decline them if they want to. Remember, I'm not salesy. So I gave them the freedom to say no to something. And so if they didn't like it, I would just take it off. And it wasn't a hardcore push or anything like that. I would just take it off, and then we would go from there. So that's something that I developed along the way over the course of me being on the phone so much with clients.
And I need to ask you too, because selling insurance to me seems like it's one of those time structured things. It's like, okay, I've got 30 minutes to make this sale. You know, I've talked with multiple agents over time, and the ones who always get my business are the ones who are like you. They're going to spend some time with me, answer my questions, give me options, and not say, oh, well, I've got another call. Got to go now. And that happens, by the way. So do you find that you're spending, at least in the very beginning, a good bit amount of time for something that may or may not come to fruition? But you have to do it, don't you?
Yeah, so I don't actually mind doing any of that stuff. I don't mind talking to the client and showing them. I'll even share my screen so they can see exactly what I see. I'm not going to spend hours on the phone with someone if they don't understand it, and nothing I say is going to make them understand it. I'll send them brochures, I'll send them recordings, whatever it is that they need. But I will spend time to go over it with them, because to me, building your book of business and insurance is not just the one-time sale. It's making your clients feel comfortable with you so they renew every single year, and so they refer all their friends and family to you. So one person may need a little bit more time. I'm definitely not going to cut someone off after 30 minutes. Like I've taken my time. I've spent an hour on the phone with somebody to make sure that I get that client, you know. But I feel like, you know, a lot of people in the industry, a lot of agents that I ran into, they're really just about that first commission, because in insurance you get an advance. And so they're just worried about that advance. They don't really quite understand that if you treat the client right, you do your customer service, you help them whenever they have questions, that it's not just going to be a one-time advance. You're going to have that client on your books for 40 years, you know, 50 years, and all their friends and family. So to me, treating the client right the first time, spending that extra time with them, to me is worth it.
Well, I agree with you. So that kind of goes back to the always be selling mindset, I guess. Now, you train a lot of people. Are you finding that men are more liable to go, hey, that makes sense, since that's not what they were told, apparently? Or are they a bit resistant?
Yeah, I would say in general, I've trained a lot of people. I think it just depends on the person. You know, I don't want to box anyone into men or women. I've had men that absolutely listen to everything I say, and they go out there and kill it. I've also had men that are defiant, and they want to do things the way they want to do. And same thing with women too. So I don't really necessarily think it's a per person thing. So I don't want to box anyone into that. I've had successful agents of both sexes.
Gotcha. When did you start? Okay, let's back it up. Let's go to your agency. You went from a library to your home, and now you've got a good size agency. Mm-hmm. Walk me through that, if you would, because this is part of your story, and I think it's important for people to understand now how you work and why you work the way you do, and we've covered that. So
sure,
now
sure.
What is the net result? How did this all come into play?
Sure. So, yeah, started out the library, and then started working from home. Then I started recruiting a couple friends, and then from there, I got they brought in more people. They told their friends and their coworkers and things like that. And then I started training them out of my house every Friday. They'd come over, and I do product trainings and things like that. And then it grew to be too big of a number in my house, so I rented one of those office share spaces in downtown Orlando for, I think it was like 1,300 And it had a nice conference room. It was like one of those share spaces, you know, so it wasn't private, but at least it was somewhere where we could all meet, and they had a break room and everything. I rented that for 3 months. And then from there, I moved into a 1,300 square foot building. And I rented that one. I shared the rent with somebody else in the same industry. Had a conference room. I had 8 cubicles. I had my own office. So it was pretty large. And then from there, I upgraded and I worked from home for a little bit more because then I got discouraged because people weren't coming to the office. So then I worked, and I worked from home. Yeah. And then I decided that I needed to be out of the house again, because something I've learned along these last 5 years is that I like getting up and getting dressed and going somewhere. I found that when I did work from home and I just rolled out of bed and, you know, got dressed and then made my breakfast and sat down, it started to feel very redundant, and I started to feel like I wasn't, I don't know, I don't think I'm one of those people that really enjoy working from home. I think I like getting out there and seeing people. And at the time I worked from home after that one building, I had an assistant. So she would come over to my house, and I think I just felt so bored. Like there wasn't, you know, I didn't have a place. If I wanted to train agents, I don't necessarily want every single person I'd ever meet to come over and know where I live, you know? So I ended up getting another office, and, this one was a 2-office plus a conference room plus a receptionist room plus 8 cubicles. And I stayed there for a year. And then I started thinking about really expanding and really starting to do this recruitment thing and hire a recruiter and do ads and things like that. And from that, I wanted to expand. But then I found out the price to rent an office space for the size I wanted was very expensive, and it came with so many limitations. It came with how many cars you could have parked, how many people you could have in the office at the same time. And I figured if I was going to lay out that much money, I might as well build something of my own instead of putting that money into a landlord's pocket. So at that point in time, I decided to buy my own commercial building. So I bought a 6,000 square foot building that houses more than 50 agents. It could, you know, if people came into work, it could. But that's what I did. And so I decided to invest in a commercial property all the while building my agency. So that's how far I've come in 5.5 years, is working from the library now to owning 1,000 square foot standalone building.
And that is because, congratulations, I'm guessing that you maybe rent part of that building out?
No, it's all mine.
All yours, all right. So you're talking, and I shared this at the top, you know, you're going to share with us how the right mindset coupled with unwavering grit can empower people to overcome obstacles, and we've talked a bit about that. What are some of the limiting beliefs that you overcame yourself while you were starting this journey? Because, I mean, you said at the beginning, it's not what you wanted to do. It was a temporary solution. It was a job. You were going to feed your kids, which is what we all need to do. If we have children, and I have pets, and we have to feed them, yeah, you were doing it for the right reason, but you also didn't really know what you were doing, and your training was, from what I'm hearing, more than a bit sketchy. So what are some of the things that you really learned and had to unlearn during that beginning phase and even now?
Well, so some of the limiting beliefs that I had, that one of the biggest ones was that, and this was just my mindset at the time, was that I deserve to have a salary. You know, I'm college educated. This is what I deserve. And, you know, when it didn't come in time, I really had to realign those values. And, you know, I thought commission only, I thought it was a sham. I thought it was a joke. I thought only people that don't have anything else to give to a company would take that. I looked really down on commission only. And once I actually learned about it and I saw the potential, I realized that it was a huge mindset shift. I realize now that when you work for somebody else, you are tied to them. They control your life. It's not security. It's not that job security that we all think it is. It's not. commission only means you're an entrepreneur. You're in business for yourself and only you control your destiny. And that was a huge one for me to have to learn and kind of get used to that mindset. And now, you know, I recruit agents all the time and they ask me, oh, do you have a salary? And when I say no, they look down on it like, oh, well, I deserve a salary. They have the exact same mindset I did, you know, and I'll talk to them, but if they don't want it, they don't want it. I'm not going to pursue them. But it's just one of those things that was a huge limiting belief for me. A couple more was, you know, and I still face these today. You know, why I feel like sometimes people have these too, you know, why do I deserve success? Or they have a little voice in their head that tells them that they're going to fail. They're never going to be good at this. They're never going to make a sale. That people tell themselves whenever they don't want to dial, they say things like, no one wants to hear from me, you know, and I feel like a lot of those things are masked by just excuses because you're scared. You're scared of failure. You're scared of rejection. And really, if you remove the mask, like on Scooby-Doo at the end when they take the mask off and see who the bad guys were, when you take the mask off, you have to have a heart-to-heart with yourself and realize if it's stemming from fear or if it's stemming from fear of failure, you know, you really have to reassess that. And, you know, if you're telling yourself, I'm never going to be good at this, maybe it's because you're really scared that you won't be good at that and you're going to let yourself down or somebody else down, you know, and those are just the risks that you have to take. You have to be willing to put yourself out there and face that rejection and possibly fail. You know, so many people failed in life before they hit it big, you know, and that's something I talk about too. And failure doesn't mean the end, you know, it doesn't mean the end. It's a learning curve. And I failed so many times in this business, you know, and whenever you fail like that, or you have a loss, or you lost a deal, or you made no sales for 2 weeks. You know, a lot of people quit, but really it's just kind of like an obstacle. You just have to learn to walk through it, walk around it, and keep going. And that was my biggest lesson, was not letting the little voice that we all have, not letting it win, and keep telling myself that I do deserve success. I do deserve greatness, and that I will be successful. I'm going to make a name for myself in this business. And that's what I did.
And you have, I mean, it's an amazing story. I wanted to ask you very quickly, you said, you know, you don't, there's no salary, but you mentioned advance. What is an, I know what an advance is, but what is it for our audience?
Yeah, sure. So if you sell a policy for, say, $100, we're going to keep it very simple, $100 a month, and your commission is 100% with a 9-month advance, you would make $900. Does that make sense, the math? Does that make sense?
Yes and no. What if somebody cancels it 4 months in?
Then you get a chargeback.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not just gifted money. You have to earn it. Yes.
Exactly. And
okay.
If they keep the policy past the advance, then you still get paid on those months thereafter as well. So
that's the residual. That's where the residual comes in.
Exactly. That's
okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. See, you know, those of us who just need to have insurance, or, you know, auto insurance, mortgage insurance. I live in hurricane. It's hurricane season. It just started, and I'm still dealing with the hurricane fallout from here. I've got a new roof, but my mortgage company let me know that my insurance company was in receivership, so the rest of it was never taken care of. So we're trying to deal with that now. So I'm on the other side of it going, now what? And, you know, I'm sure you deal with people like me who are just going, I don't know what to ask. I don't even know what to do. Can I even get this repaired now that I have a new insurance company? I'm sure those questions pop up all the time. And listen, a lot of us are like, I don't even want to call them. I don't even want to know what they're going to tell me. I know what they're going to tell me. It's going to suck. Turns out we have to, as, you know, insurance purchasers, we have to make those calls too. We don't want to half the time. We just don't want to, but we have to.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's why I advocate working with a broker, someone who can advocate on your behalf, you know, I know Amazon and Walmart, they're moving into the insurance industry as well because it is very lucrative. But whenever you do business with a big box or an 800 number, you're going to get that type of customer service. You know, if you actually work with a broker and you have someone advocating for you, then you have someone on your side that can help you with claims and things like that. And that's what we provide. That's what most agents, you know, I feel like that's what we're here for. We're not just here for the big bucks and the sale. We're here to actually be an advocate for our clients.
And that's as it should be. So is there anything before we move on to your entrepreneur? You got a lot going on, and I'm madly impressed with one of you, at least one of them. I know you've got a couple things going on, but you've got a luggage thing going on. Is there anything you kind of wanted to share about insurance, about being the owner of your own company? You know, just focus. I mean, is there anything in particular you want to share before we go on a different bit of a tangent here?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, one of the things that I always get asked is, how did I get so lucky? You know, what did you do that made you so successful? And I just want to tell the people out there that may be curious about the insurance industry is that the insurance industry makes the most millionaires out of any other industry in the world. Out of manufacturing, real estate is number 7. Trades, technology, it is number 1. Right? It has amazing potential for someone to change their life, to build residual income, to build familial wealth, right? But if it were easy, everyone would do it. It has a very high failure rate. And my suggestion to anyone who's curious about getting in the industry is come into it for the right reasons, right? We're here to help people. We do make great money on the side. That's a byproduct of helping people. So come into it with the right mindset and the right heart. But the other thing is you got to work. It is a lot of work. It is nonstop. I always tell agents if they want to be successful, they need to tell their family that they're not going to see them for about 6 to 8 months. You're going to be working.
What, you mean when they first start?
When they first start, yeah, they need to be working 12 hours a day for the first 6 to 8 months. And if they can put that in for 6 months of their entire life, if they can put that work in for 6 to 8 months, they will change the entire trajectory of their entire life. And a lot of people just aren't willing to do that. You know, they think they want it. They think they got it. But when it comes time to it and I sit with them and I see how many people they dialed and how many hours they actually work, they're not really working that much. I feel like a lot of people don't have the focus that it takes. And, you know, you and I talked about focus, and that's really one of the things that you have to do. You have to block out your time. You have to be a time manager. You have to realize that when you're an entrepreneur, you don't clock out at 5. You keep going, you know, building something.
And you have to have systems. You can't just write it on a notepad and go, oh, I'll remember that. No, you won't. Been there, done that. So you have to have, I've learned early on, if you don't have systems, and they almost have to be living systems, they have to be constantly, you know, innovating those systems and changing them as things change. I mean, everything these days changes so quickly. Products change, systems change, technology changes. You have to kind of stay on top of that. And people say, oh yeah, but I'm not making any money if I'm just working on my system. So without a system, you're not going to have any clients. So figure out what's important to you and, you know, do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about your entrepreneurial spirit, which we've been talking about a bit, but this is completely different from your insurance. So go. Start talking. Talk to me about your product line, because I'm fascinated with it.
Yeah, so I have 2 new product lines coming out. I'm a creative person. I'm very highly creative. I did oil paintings. I sold my oil paintings at festivals. I'm very creative. And so insurance to me is more business minded. And I like that stuff too. I can do both. But my creative side has been suffering for the past 5 years while I built this business. And now I actually have the means to be able to invest in a product that I think is great. So the two product lines, the first one is a perfume and cologne line. That one is an ode to my sister. My sister passed away last year from cancer at the age of, she had just turned 35, and she has two children. They're my niece and nephew. Alicia is my niece and Evan is my nephew. So I combine their names together and that's Alician. And so the perfume cologne is from Alician, House of Alician. And we are launching here probably in the next month, 4 to 6 weeks, of probably more than 10 to 15 fragrances. And I've been testing them now for about 8 months. I've driven to a couple of fragrance houses across the United States to test their fragrances. And they are just, the ones I've picked out and developed are amazing. I think it's going to be really innovative. And my hope with this company is that it does extremely well. And when my niece and nephew turn 18 and they want to have a company, they want to run a company, they can come, you know, to Florida, move and take over the company and have something that they can call their own. You know, one of the things I promised my sister whenever I was visiting her right before she passed away, is that I would do my best to take care of them. You know, I'm not their parent. They have a dad, but you know, I think financial security in the future is a pretty darn good thing to have. So that's the motivation behind that one. And then my passion project is my new bag line. It's called Execulux. It's for women on the go. It's not necessarily, you don't have to be traveling. They are very large size, bags, like designer looking bags that are on a roller trolley that is removable. The roller trolley can fold up very small and fit inside the bag if you need it to. It is patent pending. I filed a patent a couple months ago, so it is patent pending. And they will be available in September. Each set, there's 16 designs. I'm launching with 10. Each set comes with matching a lunch tote, a purse, a clutch, a wallet, a passport holder, a makeup case, and then there's also a men's line as well. So the men's line is a tote bag, it's a crossbody bag, and we also have a unisex backpack, and then the men have a wallet. So it's a whole line of luxury leather goods that people can use every day for their commute, for, you know, just going to work or even for travel. So that one I am very excited about. I've hand designed each purse myself, picking out the fabrics, the colors, the texture, you know, the trolley. I designed that from scratch. I sent sketches to a trolley manufacturer. I had to buy the machine that makes the trolleys because I wanted it to fold up a certain way. And so that one is just something I'm extremely excited about. I already have a wait list of over 400 people on the wait list waiting until pre-order, which is in July. And I do expect to sell out my very first shipment. So I'm just very excited about that.
Congratulations. And I'm so sorry to hear about your sister, but I love that you are, you know, keeping her in your heart and helping her children. That's amazing. And that's a terrific story. Thank you for sharing it.
And thank you.
Your bags, I've been watching, like I said, I mentioned this earlier, I've been lurking around on Facebook because you take pictures, you know, you'll be out and about and you'll have this bag. And I'm, you know how somebody will, you know, you'll walk up to somebody and say, here's your coffee and donut. And you're going, gimme, gimme, gimme with both hands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing, I'm looking at those bags going, gimme, gimme, gimme. Both my hands are like, I don't need one. I don't. You ought to see my closet. Honest to God, I live at home. I work at home. I'm an introvert. I rarely go anywhere. But I love bags. And it looks like Nordstrom's threw up in my closet. It's terrible in there. And I look at yours and go, I wonder if I should maybe start traveling again. I mean, that's what, you know, the kind of thought that those things evoke in me. The one that you shared recently, I can't remember, you were somewhere at some kind of event, and I saw the trolley handle. I went, oh, but I did not realize until you just said now that it's removable, which now makes me go, gimme, 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 because I love a giant bag.
Yeah, so I developed it because I do go a lot of places, even just on my daily commute to the office and everything. And I feel like women, we have so much to carry. We have our purse, we have our lunch, we have our laptop case, we have folders, you know, we have our phone. And there wasn't really a solution out there that where we could carry it all, roll it, so we don't have to lug it around on our shoulder or cross body or anything like that. And the options that were available, they looked like carry-on luggage, like a suitcase. They were ugly. And so there was nothing fashionable out there that we could use on an everyday basis that would carry all of that stuff. Mine are expandable, so they get bigger the more you put into them. But if they're not fully loaded, they kind of look a little smaller. And the trolley thing, I needed it to be removable because we don't always want to roll it. Sometimes we want to carry it, and they're so sexy. Like, it could be a nice overnight bag somewhere. It can fit everything. It can fit a couple outfits, shoes, my purse, my lunch. I fit so much stuff in there. It is such a really nice size. It's not too big. It's not too small. And if you do go on a plane, it is carry-on regulated, so you can take it on board with you. It's super cute. It fits up in the stove, you know, above the seats and everything. And I've traveled a lot with it. I get stopped all the time. TSA even pulled me over one time, and they're like, "We just have to know where you got the bag." So I'm really excited about that project. I cannot wait to launch that.
You know, I'm already on your list. Do I need one? No. Do I want one? Yeah.
You might as well.
I have, you know, I've got a couple of giant, I've got a D. Donna Karan, New York, you know, big leather bag that if I go anywhere for the weekend, I shove everything, including my shoes, in there, but I can't roll it. So yeah. I need one of yours. I really do. That's just all yours too. I must have. I'm serious. I'm doing the gimme hands again. So what else? Is there anything else that you've got going on right now? And thank you for sharing that, because listen, everybody, go find this. Where can people, before I let you go, where can people find the bags? Where can they find you? Just tell us where we can, your book, tell us where we can find everything.
Yeah, so everything, all the links to everything is on my personal website, which is jessiepark.com. That's JessiePark.com. And on that website, you'll find links to my book, Soul Beneficiary. That's S-O-U-L Beneficiary. That book is on Amazon, along with the workbook. And then you'll also find my bag line, which is called Execulux. That's E-X-E-C-U-L-U-X-E. That website is Execulux.com. Right now we're doing pre-order wait list, so people can fill out their name and information. They'll be notified whenever we get the pre-orders in, which is in July. And then my perfume is ElysianParfum.com. And both of those, like I said, they're all on JessiePark.com. You don't have to write all this down. It's all available there. But I'm just really excited to launch both of those projects. You know that fire you get when you're an entrepreneur and you're really excited about something? I feel that fire again for these two projects. And so I'm just very excited about those.
And as a creative, I mean, this makes perfect sense. Listen, a lot of people don't realize that people like you, people like me, I write code in my sleep. I literally do. I have a computer science degree. Nobody cares about it but me, because I had to pay for it. Mm-hmm. You're a very creative person, but we have to make a living and we have to do what we do best. But we can also be extremely creative at the same time and once things calm down a little bit. So good for you. Like, I get your passion. I can hear it. And I think other people can too. And listen, everybody, go to Facebook and look at those bags. And you'll be doing the gimme hands too, because they're fabulous.
Thank you.
Okay, Jess, so you told everybody where we can find you. Was there anything left that you wanted to maybe share before I let you go? Because we're just about done with time here.
I mean, I feel like I've covered everything. I do just want to leave with this. I would say, you know, I've changed the entire trajectory of my life, not just mine, but my kids and even my parents too. You know, I was able to buy my dad a house. I've been able to help my mom out. I redid her bathroom. I helped them. I helped my daughter works for me. I would say the biggest accomplishment that I've had at all is not about the money, and it's not about, the flash or anything like that. My biggest accomplishment and the thing I am most proud of is being able to build something that not only benefits me, but also my parents, my kids, my sister's kids, and future generations from what I've been able to build with the insurance industry. So if anyone is interested at all in a career in insurance, my team and I really make sure that you're licensed, you're trained, you have mentors, you have people ready to help you, help you with your first quote, help you get on track and everything. Please go to joininspiredinsurance.com, fill out the form, and I'd be happy. That's where my passion is also, as well as helping people that want to help themselves and change their lives too. So fill out that form. We'd be very, we'll get in touch. We'll go over everything you need in order to make the career transition and answer any questions you have.
Give us the URL one more time.
Sure. It's www.joininspiredinsurance.com.
Perfect. Thank you. It has been wonderful speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the terrific tips and the advice and your passion that you have shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes, and honestly, anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. You cannot throw a stick on the internet without hitting your partner in Success Radio. So look for us, find us, and take us along on your success journey. Jesse, again, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Denise. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.